Capper, and I have 3 wins on the year, and I am still mathematically alive to make the playoffs. And this is AFL Tonight, ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. Oh, we're back. I got my regular co-host is back. He is off. He is back from the love boat. Welcome back, Adam.
Thanks.
How many drinks did you get from Isaac the bartender?
We're not going to talk about that.
Okay.
We're not going to talk about how much alcohol was consumed over the course of the last 2 weeks.
Did you? Well, you know what? Heading up to Atlantic Canada like you did, you know, the alcohol content is a little bit higher in Canada as it is in the United States.
I understand that Halifax, we were in Halifax for a day, and that town is 50% bars and 50% college campuses.
Mm-hmm.
And there is nothing else anywhere in that town.
It's a nice town, though.
It is a cool town.
Halifax is, I can see, a very beautiful city. One thing I haven't been there for is for tall ships, which happens where they bring in all the large old-time ships and stuff like that. Supposedly it's a really, really neat, I can't call it a festival, but it's a really, really neat spectacle that they put on. So, and you've come back just in the nick of time, I guess, eh? we've had some pretty strange-ass weeks, but now we're in when the league puts out their first press release talking about the playoff scenarios for Week 16. Wait a minute, we're in Week 17.
I guess it's through Week 16.
It's just as of Week 16, yeah. So, you know, it's going to be that time. As of now, Arizona has clinched the division, and Jacksonville has clinched not only the division, but they have also clinched – they haven't clinched home field yet.
Well, they've clinched home field in the conference.
Right, but exactly. They've clinched the American Conference title. That is correct. But it says a secure home field advantage throughout the American Conference playoffs. That does not make any sense if you've already clinched the American Conference title.
Right. You know, I may not be the smartest person in the world, but when you've got a 5-game lead with 4 games to play, you've won your division and you've won your conference.
Yeah, I know. I guess, well, mathematically, blah, blah, blah. And you happen to bring up this very interesting, because since we were talking about the playoffs, you brought up this very interesting number. Okay, as of right now, the way that the playoffs look, according to the league, we'll start in the National Conference. Arizona is the number one seed. They would be playing Utah, which currently owns the tiebreakers versus a hot up and coming Spokane Shock. Considering how many quarterbacks they've gone through this year, I'm very surprised that we're saying this and how horribly they started off. Then Chicago's the number two seed with McNutt being out basically for the year, going up against Dallas as the 3 seed. And Spokane, Tulsa, they still have San Jose in here, and Kansas City.
Well, San Jose is only 2 back.
Yeah, and Iowa. Sorry, Iowa, on the verge. They're on the verge. Should be interesting. It comes down to that. It's going to come down to that outside game, most likely, between Utah and Spokane. I was telling you before, watch it rain. One of the most important games of the arena football games of the year, and watch it piss poor rain.
If you pass the course,
hopefully the game will be on NIFTY. According to the commissioner, it'll be on NIFTY. Too bad it's not going to be on the NFL Network. That would have been pretty cool. We'll leave it as that. Jacksonville in the American Conference, number one seed, as we now know. Orlando holds the 4 seed. Pittsburgh is the number 2 seed by verge of their head-to-head or tiebreakers versus Cleveland, even though they're 8-6. And Georgia, so Pittsburgh would be playing Georgia. Cleveland, Tampa Bay, Philadelphia, Milwaukee. I don't know why they have it still in here. This is stupid. So we'll stop at Philadelphia.
Oh, we should really just stop at Tampa Bay.
Yeah. Or on the verge.
Yeah, but realistically, there's realistically 4 teams fighting for 3 spots in the American Conference.
Yeah. And the interesting note that you brought up was for Jacksonville specifically. Now, remember last year, or maybe those who don't, last year we had a possible issue with Milwaukee not being able to host a playoff game because of issues or renovations or whatever they were calling it over at the Bradley Center. So I think they had to play it over to U.S. Cellular, if I remember correctly. There's also talk of Arizona buying the game and hosting the game themselves, but it never came to fruition.
And it was also the conversation if Milwaukee had, let's see, if Spokane had lost to, who did Spokane play in the first round of the playoffs? Oh, was that Arizona? And Arizona was going to buy the game from Milwaukee. That was the case.
Yeah.
So, yeah, never mind.
But now, I think this is it's deja vu of 2010 all over again. What'd you find out?
Supposedly, at least according to the website of Jacksonville's home arena, there is actually no availability until the Monday before the Arena Bowl for the American Conference Championship game. Which means if the Sharks are actually going to win the Arena Bowl, they're going to have to play two games in 4 days to do it.
What is this? What are they playing, Milwaukee? I bet you if they played in Milwaukee, they could get a better date.
No, the pisser is what's knocking the AFL off. It's baton twirling, which is going to be at the Jacksonville Veterans Memorial Arena or whatever the hell they call it up there.
And it's not just one day.
It's not
just 2 days of baton twirling. It's a grand total of three.
Actually, it's before that. It goes back to Tuesday.
Oh, my God.
It's actually a full week, basically, of baton twirling. The National Tiddlywinks Foundation is pissed that they couldn't get in there, too.
Wow. Okay, see, that's not as bad as Dallas, the Vigilantes, getting bumped for Little Wayne. This is worse.
this is pretty bad. This is really, really pretty bad. The only thing we could hope for is that Aaron Garcia pulls his normal Aaron Garcia in the first round of the playoffs, and that'd be the end of that problem.
No, I want to go to Jacksonville for the Arena Bowl.
I don't. Have you ever been to Jacksonville? There ain't a damn thing to do there.
No.
There is not a goddamn thing to do in Jacksonville except get the fucking traffic.
I want to do stuff. I'm in Arizona. Okay, I could go to Arizona. I've never been to Phoenix. I've been to Phoenix, but not for a ticket for a game.
There aren't many of these cities that are really exciting me about the Arena Bowl.
Yeah. So, you mentioned that, do you think that the league would have the gall to change the game? To pull the game away from Jacksonville and give it to somebody else?
I could see it. I mean, I could see them doing a lot of things. I could see them playing a neutral site at the Ocean Center in Daytona Beach where the Bobcats, Florida Bobcats used to play some home games. I could see it, that game's against Orlando, the game being in the jungle. If it's in Tampa Bay, I could see it being at the St. Pete Times Forum. If it's in Georgia, I could see it being at the Gwinnett Center. None of these are overly far, rides for Jacksonville. I don't know. I don't know what the league's going to do. Maybe the league's just going to let them play the game on Monday, but I hope if that's the case, they don't let the National Conference play on, Friday, because that would be just a little bit of an unfair advantage.
Well, hopefully the league is able to figure something out and we won't have to, we know it has nothing to do with the game anyway because the game doesn't seem like it's going to be on NFL Network, so we'll, anyway, stupid television, Jacksonville, Vince, baton.
No, just call it stupid Jacksonville, it's good enough.
Baton, twirling.
You don't have your tickets already?
No, I don't. Damn it. Besides that, I lost my,
we're talking about the rest of the playoff picture. Things are interesting. They're definitely a hell of a lot different looking than when I left. I don't know. Last time we recorded, we already wrote Spokane off and they've won three straight games since that point. Orlando was about set to play Jacksonville, and we said, hey, Orlando can win this game and then win the division, and they're five out now. They're going to be playing in a game for their life this week.
Yeah, Arizona, I know, as we mentioned, has secured the division title.
Chicago looks good, but who knows what's going to happen now? They've got Dominic Randolph playing.
Arizona wins this weekend, and the Rush lose. Arizona clinches home field advantage throughout the National Conference.
That can't be right. Chicago beat Arizona.
According to this, I said
that's wrong. I guarantee you that's wrong. Because there'd be 3 games left to play for both. Oh, no, wait a minute. 14. No, that'd be right, because Arizona still has one more bye week.
Yeah.
Chicago wouldn't be able to get the 14.
If Chicago,
sorry, the league.
If Chicago does win, they will move to 11-4, really, and clinch a playoff spot. So if Chicago wins, then obviously that'll put a kink into the Blaze thing. But I don't know. We'll talk about the – I have a couple things about the Blaze I'm going to talk about. The Blaze owns a tiebreaker over Spokane.
For now.
Yeah, in their head-to-head matchup. And as you mentioned before, the two teams are going to face off again on the 9th at the first-ever outdoor game.
Should be a lot of fun.
It should be very interesting. Pittsburgh, as we mentioned, does hold the tiebreaker over Cleveland in the Eastern Division due to their head-to-head matchup. Cleveland hosts the matchup in Week 19.
Can you imagine that Pittsburgh is 8-6 and leading a division and they've been outscored by 61 points this year?
I know.
But I guess, in fair, if you want to look at the other, flip side of the coin, how many quarterbacks have they been through this year?
Yeah, true.
They've had four different starting quarterbacks.
But did you really expect Utah to drop 81 on them?
Well, nothing with Utah is surprising.
Okay. Orlando, if Orlando wins this week, they'll be tied with the Georgia Force, 9-6. Georgia holds a tiebreak over Orlando due to point differential in their head-to-head matchup. See, it does mean something that you have to kick the extra point at the end of the game. I told you. there's a conference seeding tiebreaker rule, split season series, blah, blah. Okay. Vigilantes, they own a 2-game lead over the Shock and Utah for third spot. That's all that they write about them. And as we mentioned before in our joke at the beginning, somehow, obviously New Orleans has been eliminated, but somehow Iowa with 3 wins, Philadelphia with 5 wins, Milwaukee with 4 wins are still mathematically eligible. But if they all lose this weekend, they'll be eliminated. And you know what? I have a feeling, Adam, it's a combination of more than just a loss. I think if another team wins, they're out. Period. Has to be.
I don't know. I'm not going to try to figure out how the AFL does math with these things.
So, of the games last week, there really wasn't much to say, to be with all honesty, because you had 2 games that were close. I guess those are the games that we could talk about specifically. And really, a lot of the other games were just total blowouts. I mean,
there were 3 games that were close.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Utah beating Kansas City by 1 based on a missed extra point.
Yeah, I'm still not totally sure why Kansas City gave up on J.J. Rattorink, the week before the biggest game of the team's season, but apparently someone decided that was a good idea. Give Steve Wassel a lot of credit, for coming in and dropping 60 on the board. Even if it is the Utah defense they did it against. But the bottom line for Kansas City, this is just a team that's found ways to lose all season long. It's not that I think Kansas City is really a 5-10 team, but it's just a team that just has not figured out how to how to win games. And it's just, you can tell, it's biting them in the butt and it bit them in the butt again, and now they're pretty much done. I mean, they're not making up 3 games of 4 to play.
Another game of note, and just so sad to see this occurring. San Jose is outscored at halftime 41-7. 41-7. Andrico Hines started this game. Then I don't know if he got hurt or not. I can't see what happened here. But then Kurt Rocco came in, and Kurt Rocco, who is doing his best Brad Banks imitation, comes in and they just absolutely slobber knock the SaberCats. It's just so sad to see this team lose this many in a row.
Can someone please explain to me why, with less than a minute left in this game, Kurt Rocco was throwing a 48-yard touchdown pass? Can anyone explain that one to me?
Tiebreaker?
I don't think they're worried about tiebreakers crossing conferences. I mean, the 82 points was awfully, awfully bad for San Jose. It's the second worst beatdown in the history of the league. It's the only loss by more than 50 points that the league has seen since 07, I believe. I haven't had it in front of me. I don't have it anymore. I think it was 07 when Dallas absolutely beat the holy hell out of
New York, 60-7.
Yeah, that was a. That's actually not the game I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of the game. It was like 60. 65-13 or something like that. But you know, whatever the case is, yeah, this was just ugly. There are no two ways around it. Mark Reed threw three more picks, gives him 20 for the year. This guy would go three seasons and not throw 20 picks. I mean, we're not even, you know, there's still plenty of time left in this year, but, I mean, geez, San Jose's got one road win in 8 games. I mean, this has never been a team that's been great on, you know, been that good on the road, but 1-7? I mean, it's not even like they came anywhere close in this game. It's not like Cleveland's some juggernaut. This is a team that looked like a few weeks ago when I left was just going to mail it in for the rest of the year.
Yeah, by the way, the game that you're talking about, and it's funny, it was the game that I was at. It was Albany, Texas Terror, 86-24. They beat them by 62. Cleveland.
Yeah, it was the worst loss of him.
Yeah. They beat them by 6. Beat them by 61 points. It's so embarrassing. Let's see. Philadelphia. Here's the other close. One of the other close games. Philadelphia, Arizona. Arizona wins by 1.
Yeah, and it's I guess a little surprising that it takes Arizona. You know, a missed field goal by Philly with 6 or 7 seconds left and the touchdown with virtually no time left, you know, just before it, to be able to beat a Philly team that, you know, I don't care what the league says, is mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. You know, it's a little surprising. Yes, it's a long road trip for Arizona. I don't know. There's something about Arizona just doesn't look or feel quite the same as it did. I know this team is going to be the one seed in the playoffs. I know this team is probably going to be the heavy, heavy favorite. You know, to be able to get to the Arena Bowl out of the National Conference. Something just doesn't feel quite right about the way things are going right now. And this was a game that I think maybe will serve as a bit of a wake-up call to Arizona that anybody can indeed beat this team. Yes, we know there's not a team in the league that the Rattlers can't beat, but seeing Philly give Arizona everything it can handle with Ryan Vann throwing 2 touchdown passes in the game is a little bit scary.
Well, you also have that. You remember, you also got to give where credit is due. Vanna did run for 4.
And he ate 3 footballs along the way. So what else is new?
And I think the last game that we'll really mention, I don't think you really want to speak of, the Georgia-Orlando game. You know, that was a very big game. But it was Milwaukee losing to Pittsburgh by 1.
Yeah, and Milwaukee is inventing ways to lose, too. First of all, I don't even think Gino Gadulli was in the AFL when I left, and now he's starting for Milwaukee, and ironically, you know, this was a guy who was a third stringer or a fourth stringer in the CFL for how many years? Mm-hmm. And now it's the guy he replaced in Milwaukee, Eric Ward, who's got the job up in Saskatchewan as a third stringer now. So I think that's a little bit funny. But Milwaukee has the football. Pittsburgh has no timeouts left with 20 seconds left to play. All you've got to do is go forward once or throw the ball maybe 2 or 3 times into the stands, and the game should be over, and Gino Gadulli fumbles. Just amazing. Give Pittsburgh a lot of credit for you know, finding some way to win this game with Chris Wallace at quarterback. You know, Pittsburgh, again, we've been mentioning, you know, rotating quarterbacks. Pittsburgh's used 4 different starting quarterbacks this year, and they're 8-6. I understand they're playing in a terrible division, but you still got to go out and win the games, and you still got to score some points. Give that defense a lot of credit, too. I don't care who you're playing against. 38's a great number.
Yeah. Was there any others? I think it was that.
Dallas beat Tulsa by a touchdown, then Dallas tried choking it away the same way that Milwaukee did.
That's right, by a touchdown, you're correct.
Yeah, and a quick note on the Orlando game, second worst loss in the history of the Predators at home, and a loss that really puts some things in jeopardy right now, because the Predators, you know, we'll talk about this game they've got against Pittsburgh this week, but this is the longest streak, you know, for, as far as I know, any professional team in any sport for getting to the playoffs, and it is in real jeopardy right now. Predators have lost 3 straight, and they've looked really bad in doing so.
The current streak, yes, because I think, I mean, in...
Right.
You mean North America? North American football?
I think it's in American sports.
Okay, just want to make sure. The difference if it was North American or if it was just U.S. sports.
Okay. I don't remember, but I know Tampa, the Storm /
Gladiators.
Yeah, / Gladiators had that streak until 2008 when the Storm didn't get in the playoffs, and the Predators took over that designation.
Okay.
And I actually think it is North America, because I think they made a big deal out of when Edmonton didn't make the playoffs a couple years ago.
Yeah, that was 33 years, though.
Was it 33 years?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But that was the longest active streak, and that was the longest active streak by a long, long margin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. What else? What else do we have this week? Well, we talked about it for the past 2 weeks, and because they've come out, I know you weren't around when they mentioned it, but and if you want to just keep it to your three players yourself, as everybody knows, currently the Hall of Fame voting is fans can get involved. All you have to do is head over to the league site at arenafan.com. Sorry. Freudian slip.
You got to say Freudian slip, yeah.
arenafootball.com. Voting is going on through the 22nd, I think, and you can vote once a day. From what you've seen, Adam, I mean, do you agree with the choices, or and who? Let's say who? I know it's only five, but who would be your top three for sure that you would think you would want to make it, and who would be your dark horse? I guess
my first question is, who decided that the fans are going to vote on who goes in the Hall of Fame?
I guess the league did, but I guess it also depends on what the weight is, because I think it's a combination of the fans voting, and it's also going to be a combination of the votes coming from the AFL, I think from the current members.
Yeah, cause I was going to say, you know, I understand this is a fans game and all that, but I mean, really, do any of these fans have any idea who who any of these guys are? You know, any of them? Anybody know who Eddie Brown is? Anybody know who Sam Hernandez is? Anybody know who Gene Nudel is? Anybody know any of these guys? Short of Barry Wagner and Darren Arbett, probably less than a quarter of the AFL fans right now have any clue who any of these guys are. Yeah. So fans having any weight in this, in my eyes, is ridiculous.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's as little as 20-25%.
You know,
It's like the, it's like the voting for Dancing with the Stars. You know, it's not like it's not like American Idol. That's all fan based.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky. I live in a city where there's been arena football since 1992, and some carnation of arena football since 1991. We don't want to talk about that first year. But how many other cities can say that they've had teams for this long?
True.
Really. So it's hard for fans in, in Milwaukee or in, Spokane or in New Orleans to be able to go back and say, oh, I remember these guys. Well, no, you don't. You didn't have teams at that point. And I've got to imagine in cities, I mean, save for you, really, in Montreal, who else is out there watching, arena football in some state that doesn't, in Colorado right now, you had a team for how many years? How many people are watching arena football now in the state of Colorado?
No. None.
People who bet on the game and are watching it on the NFL Network? I don't know. So I'll say this about the Hall of Fame class. I'm real happy I don't see John Elway's name on here because I was convinced it was going to be. I'm really glad John Bon Jovi's name is not on here. I'm a little disappointed that Kurt Warner's name is on here. I understand that he is the quintessential name from the Arena Football League.
Right.
But what he did in this league didn't warrant anything like this. There are a ton of quarterbacks that have basically the exact same resume that Kurt Warner does. And none of them are ever going to get in the Hall of Fame. So to put Kurt Warner on this list right now with so many other deserving names. Again, not saying that he shouldn't eventually be in the Hall of Fame for what he means to the game, but because it's been so long since we've had a class and there are so many you look at these 10 names on this list, every single one of these people deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And every single one of them will be in the Hall of Fame eventually.
Exactly. Everybody that was on the top 20 list should be in line. So it's going to be very interesting next year once the new AFL players are allowed to be eligible.
If it were up to me, I would take the five guys this year and I would take the five guys that didn't get in this year and put them in next year. Because, I mean, like I said, all these guys deserve to get in and none of them deserve to sit here and wait on a ballot for so many years. I think it's pretty clear Barry Wagner, in this guy's opinion, is the best guy, best player that has ever played in this league and ever probably will play in this league at this point. Eddie Brown voted number one overall for some unknown reason, which I'm still sticking on Joe Coughlin's back. Joe, you hear me?
even though he claims he did not vote him as number one.
He did not vote him for number one, and he'll openly tell you he voted for Jay Gruden number one, but he didn't vote for Barry Wagner, and that's what screwed us over.
nice.
Yeah, it's pretty clear Barry Wagner's going to be in. It's pretty clear that Eddie Brown is going to be in. I think probably maybe not the second best Iron Man of all time, but certainly one of the five best Iron Men of all time, probably one of the best three Iron Men of all time, Hunky Cooper. He's definitely going to get in the Hall of Fame. If he doesn't get in on this ballot, it'd be a total travesty, too.
Who's your dark horse? But
any of these guys really dark horses?
Well, no. I mean, one that you would, yes, deserving, but out of all that's there, may surprise some people.
Sam Hernandez is not going to get in, I don't think, with this crop of guys. He was the best two-way lineman this league ever had. Mm-hmm. So I think he's deserving of getting in right now, but I don't think he's going to.
Okay.
And I think that the one guy, if I had to pull one guy off of this list right away and say, I don't think so, it would be Darren Arbett. Just because, and not to say that Coach Arbett doesn't deserve it. He's still in the game. He's still building on what he's doing. And hell, after this year, you really want to put him in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I really, considering that he was still on the roster for the payroll for the Sabercats, even though the team really didn't exist, I thought it was very admirable. But I think for me, do I dare say that Kurt Warner could be a dark horse? The only reason why I would say that is that you can see, and I mentioned this last week, you can see all the positive stuff coming from Warner getting into the Hall of Fame. Obviously, we know Warner is going to be making the NFL Hall of Fame sooner or later, and he may be, and I think Andy may mention this too, is that he will be the only player to make it to the AFL Hall of Fame and the NFL Hall of Fame. He's on Fox. He's on the NFL Network. It's going to be a name, I think, that the league's going to, they're going to use to their advantage, and as I said, I think that's probably one of the, that would be the main reason, the best reason for Warner to make it. I still think that there should be a builder's category. It would be him. Because you look at 3 years from some of these players, 3 years, I think 3 years is that's the minimum, I think, so, that you can get in with.
It's not good. Well, you know they made the minimum around him.
Oh, I'm for sure.
They made the minimum for for Kurt Warner, but you mean the founders' wing of the AFL Hall of Fame is not going to be called the Jim Ferrero Hall of Fame?
No,
it's not.
No.
Well, when did they change that one when I left?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. they changed that while I was on vacation. Just making sure.
So it'll be interesting to see the picks. We'll be able to jaw on it some more once we do find out who they are. But I think a lot of people who have been with the league, have been following the league as long as they have, should not really have any issues with it. Some with more than others. But
No one should be complaining about any of these names getting in the Hall of Fame.
No, I agree.
If you want to complain about the timing of which they're getting in the Hall of Fame, go for that. But there's nobody that can argue in any way, shape, or form that any of these guys don't deserve to be in a Hall of Fame for the AFL.
Agreed. And it's too bad that they've waited so long to do this, and there's going to be such a backlog.
And it's too bad that they only decided they were going to put five in this year. I don't know who decided.
I know. I don't really understand that, but eh.
I wish they would do it, kind of like baseball does it, where there's no set number. But it's based on percentage of votes, however they want to tabulate. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand you would probably have 50 guys get in this year, but it's overdue. It's long overdue.
Yeah.
I think it'd be cool. You have 50 Hall of Famers. You put some giant banquet together at the Arena Bowl for all of them. I think that'd be really cool.
Won't happen, though.
They
gotta set their limits, I guess.
After all, we're not gonna know where we're flying for the Arena Bowl until Monday night.
Yeah, I know.
By the way, media pays on Thursday.
That makes it even worse now. You're right. Oh, man. It makes it even worse.
Unless Jacksonville gets knocked out, there's no way we're going to know.
Yeah. An interesting thing came across, and I've not seen anything on the transaction wire even remotely close to this, because Donovan Morgan supposedly stated on a Philadelphia wide receiver, Donovan Morgan stated on his Twitter, on his Facebook page, that he had been signed by the UFL. There's been nothing on there's nothing in the transactions at all, because usually if somebody gets signed by a team, they usually go on the other league exempt almost immediately. I guess either we'll see it within the next 2 days, or he will not be playing at all this week.
Well, does it really truly matter for Philadelphia anymore? Even if this is a, you know, I'll use the, you know, air quotes, marketing player, mm-hmm. who's making a reported or alleged $1,000 per week for the 3,000, let's see, Philly's got a bye week, right? Philly's already played 15 games, yeah. For the $3,000 that Donovan Morgan will be leaving on the table, he's going to make a lot more than that playing with the UFL.
Yeah, exactly.
To break a contract, even if that's what it comes down
it's
to.
It's not that, though. You know that. There's always been an open for the AFL or AF2 when it came to going to another league. There's always been an open. It's not like this.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know where the UFL. Then again, we saw Greg Orton do the same thing. So,
yeah.
Go Greg.
Yeah, and it's not like the CFL where you are tied into an actual contract. You know?
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, it's definitely the bigger UFL signing is definitely Greg Orton this week.
Yeah.
Because he's on a Spokane team that A is playing great football and B is going to need him to make the playoffs. And now it's pretty clear that you know, after already watching that receiving core get decimated from last year, you know, but between Marky White leaving and now Orton leaving, what the hell is left in Spokane?
Well, they actually did, you know, luckily, they did get offensive line Chris Pino back. He was one of the last few drops, cuts from the Montreal Alouettes training camp roster. So they were able to get him back.
Yeah, I know they signed Chaz Gessner. That's great. But,
yeah.
You know, I mean, what else is there? I mean, yeah, they're going to be struggling to fill these receiving gaps. I mean, Orton is a guy who's got over 100 catches on the year.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
And I could make the argument that White, even though I don't think he won any of the post-game awards, was the MVP of the Arena Bowl last year.
It's going to be interesting. You know, this may hurt them more than anything else. We'll have to...
Yeah, Donovan Morgan, I mean, I understand. Look, the guy's been great in the AFL over the course of the last couple of years. But he's played... This is like when Tamon Marshall was playing with Grand Rapids. I mean, come on, did it really matter?
No, but I'm noticing that also that these people, that these teams have been able to find these other receivers. They've come out of the woodwork somehow, and they've been able to, you know, been able to make up for certain things. You know, look at Tulsa. Look at Tulsa and McBroom as an example.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's just the law of averages in the AFL. Somebody's got to catch touchdown passes.
Oh, I know, and it gets even worse, by the way, too, for Spokane, because Raul Villa was also placed back on the IR.
Yeah, so I mean, they're literally, 100% of their receiving core from last year is gone.
It's true. Yeah, Huey Whitaker's in Tampa. Yeah. You are right.
So it is all gone in Spokane.
There was a head coaching change, and I'm very surprised there hasn't been more than, it's the second head coaching change of the year. But this is one that we all saw coming. We're surprised that it took so long for it to occur, but it also questions, you know, who currently now is their head coach. You know, Derek Stingley was summarily fired, resigned, whatever, from the Voodoo. I mean, they're playing horribly. Quarterback, you know, I think it all went downhill when they had their press conference at the beginning of the year and saying Danny Wimpron is our starting quarterback.
They put out a press conference for that?
Well, that's when the team announced they came back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Having, you know, poor Raymond Filios has been doing the best that he can. You know, there's only so much that you can do with a quarterback who only has a letter as a first name. There were rumors, actually, that he was going to become their interim head coach. But, in a turn that I'm sure a lot of us should have seen coming, John Norris resigned as their general manager, who went 3-11 last year, by the way, with the former New Orleans Voodoo slash Bossier City Battle Wings.
3-13?
Yeah.
5-11? 3-13.
Yeah,
you said 3-11.
I said 3-11. He's now their head coach, interim head coach. So he steps down from being general manager to doing this. I don't think it's going to make much of a difference. They don't have a quarterback.
Well, and they're 2-12. I mean, you
they can still play spoiler, though. I mean, that's the thing. I don't think it's going to matter. I mean, look what Spokane did to them last week. You're 0-4 at home. Spokane smashes you at home.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm looking forward to that last home game of the year for New Orleans next week.
I feel bad for them.
New Orleans against Milwaukee.
Yeah, hey, they actually may have had a chance to win.
They're going to be favored in that game.
I don't know, and I don't know if you had heard while you were gone, is there is a rumor going on that the Arena Bowl is going to be in New Orleans next year.
Okay, I guess that would remove the idea of having to make travel plans on Tuesday morning for
yes.
a Friday game.
Exactly. Yes, because supposedly and anybody who didn't hear it a couple weeks when we were talking about it the past couple weeks, the New Orleans Voodoo fans got their season ticket renewals and it says shh, hush, hush, hush type of thing, you know, trying to play it down. But it looks like the league is going to, at Arena Bowl, is going to announce that New Orleans is going to host the 25th edition. The 25th edition of the Arena Bowl.
Well, look at it this way. At least we know there's not going to be a true home field advantage for anybody.
No.
Yeah. We damn well know New Orleans isn't getting that much better between now and then. No, I don't understand this move. We already know John Norris cannot coach in this league.
Yeah.
We know that. Good defensive coordinator, never made it as a head coach, never will make it as a head coach. Raymond Filial, we don't know. Could be the next Jay Gruden. Could be not the next Jay Gruden. Could be the next Steve DeBerg, for all I know. But you got to give the guy a shot, right?
Yeah, I understand. I understand.
I mean, I don't know whether this is John Norris's idea of, okay, let me work hands-on with this guy first.
Okay.
And then, you know, then maybe we'll turn the reins over to him next year. Whether, you know, there's anything else coming down. I don't know whether, you know, Mike New could possibly come back. God knows if, you know, I have the name been kicked around the boards a ton is Tim Markham.
Yeah.
Because he could try to stick it to Tampa Bay twice a year. Not that I think Tim Markham would have any desire to do that, right? But yeah, you've got a team with nothing going for you. At least try something. Give the fans something they haven't seen before. You know, because, I mean, face it, Bossier City was a train wreck last year. Was it John Norris's fault? No,
no.
It was not all his fault.
No,
the team was as good as dead the day Raymond Filial went down.
Exactly. Started off 2-0, and that's where it went down from there. Yep, I agree.
But you know, it's I don't understand the move. I don't know what New Orleans is really, you know, thinking or trying to accomplish this week. Part of me is intrigued to go see this team play against Tampa Bay this week, but I'm not so sure why.
You actually may get a better game in the Orlando game.
I should definitely get a better a game. The Orlando game is the game of the week.
Yeah.
Should be fine. We'll see.
My only thought would be with Coach Markham is that maybe I am going to go ahead and stay on in Dallas for the rest of the year. And that Coach Norris is just saying, you know, let's just play things out, that type of thing, and then we'll start.
Well, yeah.
We'll start.
I mean, there'd be no way Markham could start now in New Orleans. I'm talking about, you know, prospectively for, you know, for the 2012 season.
I guess it depends on how good his relationship is with Coach Dan Newman, with owner Dan Newman.
I don't know. I thought it was going to matter where he put his yacht on the bay or not.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't just say that out loud.
No.
Sorry, Coach.
Yeah. One last quick note, as we know, you know, Russ McKinnon went down for Chicago, and it gets worse for the Rush. Currently, the rookie leader in interceptions and leading in the single-season record for interceptions also, second in interception return yards, Vic Hall is placed on the IR. Well, it does help Rajon Kaiser and possibly setting the record again. He's only two back.
Well, that's a big problem for Chicago.
It is, because it, you know, it gives quarterbacks, you know what, Vic Hall's not there anymore. I have another lane that I can pass along.
Well, it's not always about getting the picks. What makes you that great of a defensive back? You know, in the NFL. There was a year Champ Bailey had, I think it was one interception or two interceptions, some tiny little number, but you know, when you dig really, really deep into the stats that the AFL has no clue of how to keep as to how many times a quarterback is throwing their way, only something like 14% of all passes that year were thrown at Champ Bailey. Now you've only got two corners on the field, and you've only got five receivers in the target, you know, in the pass route. 14% is an incredibly low number, considering the fact that Bailey would always be lined up against your team's best receiver. So I don't know whether it's the case of Vic Hall is that good or all the other quarterbacks are that much more afraid of all these other guys that Chicago is throwing out there. But what it does do that's a big problem is it brings in somebody who probably has never played the position before, to have to replace him, which not only – takes the target away from Vic Hall, but it puts a huge bullseye on the back of some, unsuspecting third defensive back.
Right. So, this week will be very interesting. That's all I can really say. Sure, Chicago's playing Utah, a team that's not known to play very well on the road, but this is a great segue, actually. It's leading in, this is the Utah team, this is the Jekyll and Hyde Utah team so far, at least for the past five weeks. I just don't, we'll have to see what's going to happen. For all we know, Tommy Grady will torch Chicago this week.
There's pretty much no game on the schedule that you could say, yep, Utah's going to win this game by a comfortable margin, or yep, Utah's going to lose this game by a comfortable margin, because would it really surprise you if Utah either won or lost by 40 any given week?
I know, and that's what I'm thinking. If you go back to their last two wins, this is what I mean how Jekyll and Hyde Utah has been. Remember, this is a Utah team that 5 weeks ago, coming into the game 5 weeks ago, was the top scoring team when it came to, Tommy Grady was on fire. Mind you, their defense was still suspect, but it was a team that was scoring a ton amount of points. Then, for the next 3 weeks, if they go on a three-game losing streak, they get outscored. They only score 136 points. They give up 203. Okay, Tommy Grady was halfway decent. 776 yards, 16 touchdowns, and 4 interceptions. It's just that the defense played absolutely horrible. I think there were a lot of turnovers also. I think Grady had one game. I think a couple of gazillion turnovers. The last 2 weeks, this is the Utah team that we've been thinking about for most of the year. They scored 142 points. Now, they've already scored more points than they did in 3 weeks during a three-game losing streak. And, Adam, they've only given up 100 points.
Well, Utah still has a very big problem right now, and that's that one road win that they've got. Now, the great road win, the more wins that Georgia's accumulating, the better and better that road win looks, but there's still only one road win. And 3 of these last 4 are on the road. Now, of course, you've got the toss. Yeah, I guess there is one game, and you could see Utah not losing by 40, and that's the game at home against New Orleans. But the rest of these games, this is going to be interesting. At Chicago, at Spokane, at Cleveland, these are not short road trips either. These are, these are some lengthy road trips to some very nasty, nasty locations. I also find it interesting that last week was the first time that Utah won a game this year without scoring at least 69 freaking points.
Yep.
You've got to be able to win games when you score in the 50s at some point.
And they won because of the missed extra point. That's the thing, a missed extra point. Grady has thrown 18 touchdowns over the last 2 weeks, 570 yards, and no picks. Obviously, that's a huge difference in why they're back on a two-game winning streak and currently in the driver's seat for that last playoff spot in the conference. So, if they continue, just looking at you're right. They have to have some more road wins. Going back to my picks saying that they were going to make the Arena Bowl, I don't know now. They're going to have to get hot. Obviously, that's what the playoffs are anyways. You're going to have to get hot. Because we saw last year what happened to Jacksonville, one and you're done, right?
Well, it's very clear this is a team that is going to have to win at bare minimum, at absolute bare minimum, 4 more road games to win the Arena Bowl. Because they're going to have to beat at least one of, if not at least 2 of Chicago, Spokane, and Cleveland to get in the playoffs. We know they're going to have to go on the road because we know Arizona's already won the division. So they're going to have to win 2 playoff games on the road. Then they're going to have to win the Arena Bowl on the road in all likelihood.
Yep. So it's one win. We keep coming back to that unfortunate fact, right?
But again, this is also a team that went into Arizona and damn near won the game in overtime.
Yeah, that's true too. So I don't know.
Yes, the team went on the road to start of the year, got torched by Orlando, got torched by San Jose. By the way, that loss is looking a little iffier every day.
I know.
But then since then, at Arizona lost in overtime, at Georgia won the game, at Iowa the offense absolutely collapsed, but they only lost by two, and then they just got romped by Tulsa a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's not a capable team.
No.
It just hasn't been able to really totally figure it out yet.
I think it depends on how Tommy Grady ended up. If he plays as well as he's doing now, then maybe they can pull off the win. I don't know. It's something.
The fact of the matter is Tommy Grady's got 100 touchdown passes, and this team's 7-7.
I know. second most touchdowns. Or sorry, the league record for touchdowns was set by Griesen, right?
Yeah.
And he was on a team that was, what were they last year?
They were 13-3. They were, I'm guessing they're 13-3.
Yeah. Actually, I apologize. The record, sorry. What were they in 2007? I'm sorry, it was Georgia Force back in 2007. That's the record.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. They were 14-2. They were 14-2 in 2007. So I was thinking of Griesen last year with Milwaukee, and they were 11-5. So,
Kyle, we were looking before for the most points in NFL history. How come we never thought of that Milwaukee team last year? Since, you know, they only had almost 30 points more than the 07, I guess, Force.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or whoever it was at
10-16. I know. I think we're all thinking 2010 is a blur.
So maybe Jacksonville won't break the record for the 16-game record for most points in a season, but we'll see.
Yeah, they keep dropping as many points as they are capable of. You never know, but...
It's 150... 148 points they would need to tie the record. That's a lot of points.
2 weeks?
I understand this is a team that's had six straight games with at least 62 points. It's a big difference between 62 and 74.
That's true. We are going to be talking about this week's games. Week 17 is upon us, and as usual, the Week 17 preview is brought to you by thefindout.com. For tricks, tips, and hidden treasures the internet has to offer, go to thefindout.com. It's something worth sharing. After having only one Friday game, we have a ton of Friday games. One Friday game last week, we had a ton of Friday games this week. That's very nice for the AFL to celebrate Canada Day with all this great football action.
I know.
Tell you. I really don't think we really need to mention the first game. It's New Orleans at Tampa Bay. I think it's just a matter of how many points is Tampa Bay going to win by.
You want to just talk about Winnipeg-Hamilton instead?
That's another league. Remember that. It's the other league.
I know, but it's certainly going to be a more exciting game than this one.
This
game's at least got a slight level of intrigue to it. At least there's one... maybe potential playoff team in here, and you know, New Orleans, the new coach, and all that.
That's true, too. That's true.
Better than the game we're going to talk about in a couple down the line.
Yeah, I know. But as you were mentioning also, the game of the week, which I'm actually tending to agree with you, Pittsburgh travels to Orlando. I think it's going to depend on who starts for the Power. I really do not see Orlando losing this game, with all honesty. But Pittsburgh does have a reason to win. They are currently the 2 seed. They could easily, you know,
and they'll in all likelihood not be in the playoffs, you know, as of the start of week 18 if they lose this game.
Exactly. Especially if Cleveland does beat Milwaukee.
Which is probably going to happen. Right now, I mean, if Orlando plays the way Orlando played last week, the Predators wouldn't beat Milwaukee the way they played last week. It's been a long time since the Predators have played a good game. I mean, you figure, let me pull this up real quick. I mean, I know since I left, the Predators have played like absolute dog crap. You know, the loss against Georgia, the loss at Tampa Bay, albeit a heartbreaker, the loss against Jacksonville, again, another heartbreaker. The game against Iowa was dominant for one half, but, God, the second half football was terrible. The game against Milwaukee was god-awful.
Yeah.
So the Predators have really not played a great game since the middle of May. And that's scary. And this is, you know, look, the schedule for Orlando, thank goodness, is relatively easy on the way out. The only team that's going to make the playoffs left is this one, in all likelihood. They're at San Jose, they're at Tulsa, they have New Orleans. But the Predators have to be really, really careful right now. I mean, I know this is always a team that somehow finds a way to get in the playoffs, even in the worst situations. But this is going to be tough. If Bernard Morris comes back and Bernard Morris plays the way that he really can, I can see Pittsburgh pulling the upset in Orlando.
Yeah, I mean, Morris is only, he's throwing 37 touchdowns and only 7 INTs. So, I mean, he just has not been, you know, hasn't been healthy, so.
Yeah, Pittsburgh, I'm a little bit, you know, concerned with road form here of late for Pittsburgh as well. You know, they start off with 3 wins in their first 4 games on the road and then kind of lay an egg against Tampa and then really lay an egg against Utah.
Yeah.
So again, another team, 3 of the last 4 on the road, including a game at Cleveland.
And versus Arizona.
And a home game. And a home game against Arizona. Yeah. Yikes. So this is a very, very important game for both sides. Pittsburgh, really neither team can afford to lose this game. I think when it's said and done that Orlando's going to find a way to win, but it wouldn't surprise me if Pittsburgh at least, you know, keeps this one very, very close for a long time.
Tulsa, Iowa, whose team is this currently in Iowa? Is this Brad Banks or is it Lee Ladowski? Tulsa, you know what? Justin Allgood has basically given the Philadelphia Soul the biggest finger that he could give any other team. It just seems that he has been totally rejuvenated playing with the talents. Yes, I know his percentage, completion percentage, is down.
I still think he sucked. But okay, if you think he's been great, okay, sure.
Hey, I think he's, considering where he was with the way he was in Philadelphia, Adam, you got to admit, he is playing a hell of a lot better.
Yeah, except in Philadelphia, he was scoring more points. Yeah, they put up 60. Let's see, they put up 58 in the first game he played. They put up 60 in a game he played against San Jose before he finally went to the bench. He's got 48 and 48 in his 2 games. You know, his 2 games starting with Tulsa. I'm not impressed. I don't care what you say.
I mean, he sure is 1-1. Yeah, 1-1.
And I could give one damn less who actually wins this game.
Yeah.
But hey, Iowa's fighting for its playoff rights, right?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, I know. It doesn't make any sense.
I think Tulsa's going to win this game, right? I guess.
Yes. Yes. No question.
Sure. Yeah. I'll go with that.
Tulsa should win this game, as I said, unless Bizarro comes out of the woodwork again. we're talking about this for Utah, Chicago. You know what? Unfortunately, as much as I love the way that Tommy Grady is playing. I don't think it's going to matter who starts for the Rush. I think Chicago is going to eke this one out just barely. But then again, Utah, I don't think Chicago would be able to stick with them when it comes to a shootout. If it is going to be a shootout, Utah. You know, like how I'm wavering here with this one?
Tim, make a pick.
Chicago.
Okay. I'm going to go with Utah. I don't like Dominic Randolph was really not good last week against Iowa. I mean, yes, 58 points looks like a good number. Then you go back and you look at what Iowa's given up for the entire year.
Yep.
And you kind of look at the whole body of work. He went 17 of 27. He came with 4 touchdowns. It's, you know, if not for two returns for touchdowns, you know, who knows if they're going to, you know, if they're going to even win this game against Iowa. They were outscored 27-7 in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but before it all kind of fell apart. So I'm not sold on the Rush right now. I'm really not sold on any team in that division right now. So I do think Utah makes a big statement and does get the road win that it really, really badly needs this week.
Nice. A game that could be a little taxing. Could be just because of the actual trip across the country. Jacksonville goes into San Jose. San Jose trying to get off that snide. I for once, I'm not going to say it's not going to affect an Eastern team in any way, shape, or form. Poor San Jose is going to continue on with their eighth straight loss.
Yeah, it's really hard to see how, you know, this was a 5-2 team once upon a time. This was a 5-2 team that actually looked really damn good. You know, blowing out Spokane, blowing out Utah at home. You know, the win against Philly at the time looked pretty good. You know, we didn't know how bad Philadelphia was really going to be, and then all of a sudden the wheels just kind of came off. Yeah, I don't know what happened with this team. It's Mark Reeb right now is playing like, you know, Helen Keller's calling offensive plays for him.
Ouch.
But the problem, I mean, look at the defense. Since holding Tulsa to 33, it's clearly a tale of two seasons. It's very plain. 48 against Spokane, 57 against Kansas City, 54 against Chicago. We're gonna skip over that Iowa game. You know, 55 against Utah. Expect the bump. 33 against Tulsa, and then it all falls apart. 61, 65, 54, 76, 55, 70, 64, 82?
Yeah.
What's up with the defense for San Jose? I can only imagine how many Aaron Garcia is going to hang in this game.
9.
It's going to be a lot.
Yeah. I said the only thing that could help them is if for some reason the trip does them in. I don't see that. I don't see that happening.
Or if, you know, Jackson. I mean, you do have to remember, short of, you know, the Arizona thing, Jacksonville's got nothing left to play for.
Yeah. Just the number one seed, really. But, you know, they are still scoreboard watching. But
I mean, there isn't another team in the league that can catch them.
Yeah.
So if you're Les Moss, there's a point that you have to say, you know, okay, should I sit Aaron Garcia so he doesn't have his, you know, annual trip to the IR right before the playoffs?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's way too early to think about that. There's still four damn games left in the season. But there's no one else that's catching Jacksonville short of Arizona.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think it's only going to take maybe one more Arizona slip for Les Moss to say, you know what, all right, let's take our foot off the gas pedal here and relax. So that's the only way I could see Jacksonville coming into this game. Maybe a little bit of a big head, maybe a little bit of a situation where they know there's really not that much to play for, but San Jose is just too much of a train wreck right now.
Yep. Three games on Saturday. By the way, we do have two teams on bye weeks this week for anybody who has playing their fantasy. Kansas City and Georgia are on bye weeks. Cleveland goes into Milwaukee. This is a Milwaukee team that was up, choked, lost to Pittsburgh. This is a Cleveland team coming off of a total shellacking of this formerly mentioned Sabercats. I actually don't think Cleveland's gonna. I know we don't know what team is going to show up from week to week when it comes to Cleveland, but I don't think we're going to have really any. I think this shouldn't be really hard, at least in my mind. I think Cleveland will win this one quite easily.
I don't know. I'm going to give Milwaukee a chance in this game, I guess. You know, again, the road has done weird, weird things to teams this year. Cleveland 6-1 at home, 2-5 on the road. Milwaukee 3-4 at home, 1-6 on the road.
Mm-hmm.
It's if the offense gives Milwaukee 45, the Mustangs can win this game.
Okay.
Big question against a team that's only allowed 604 points this year and ranks number one in the league in total defense. But I could see Milwaukee winning this game. I could. Gino Cajuli, if you take out that one damn moment in time, didn't look that bad.
Yeah.
And he's proven in his professional career he's at least competent to be able to come in off the bench and do something.
Yeah. But he won't be coming off the bench.
True. I don't know. Give me Milwaukee. Call it a gut shot.
Okay, sure. Next game on the docket. You know, if this were to be the ESPN days, the NBC days, the days where, for some reason, the AFL Eastern Division was a mirror of what it was in the NFL, this game would be all hype no matter what the team records were. You got to know right now we're talking about Philadelphia and Dallas. You didn't. You do now. Philadelphia was, if I'm not mistaken, probably, I think it was your choice at the beginning of the year probably to make the Arena Bowl. I was, you know, I was pretty high in them too, but look at where they are now.
Didn't we strike that from the records? I thought I requested to have that tape buried, but when I was gone.
I think that's right. I think if you go back and you listen to the very first episode of the year, I think there's a voiceover. You know, it's one of those weird things where, even though you're on radio, where you put your hand in front of your mouth and you can say whatever team you want.
Oh, okay, I got you.
So it's not Philadelphia Soul now. It's team to be determined. So, usually this game would be a big deal, but Dallas is pretty good at home this year. This is not the same Vigilante team as last year. This is not the same the quote-unquote defending Arena Bowl champion, you know, one of the last two Arena Bowl champions. This is a team that is in quarterback turmoil, like which a lot of teams seem to be this year. Dallas has been pretty dead on. You know,
yeah, I mean, if I were to tell you that there are seven teams that are still using the same quarterback that they were using in week one and they haven't wavered, how many really look at it? Would you be able to tell me Dan Radebaugh is one of them?
I know. And also remember, this is a Dallas team that has been using the rush a lot this year. A lot.
Yeah.
With Derrick Ross. For this team to be able to win last week, Adam, and not have a rushing touchdown from him, shows maybe they're just not one-dimensional.
Give Clint Dozell a lot of credit, because this was a team that on paper did not look very good this year. Now, granted, this division is a train wreck and an embarrassment. As you know, I'm not so sure there are any good teams in this division, including Dallas, but I know if there's any division that can hold a candle to how bad the Central has been, it's the East. And Philadelphia might be the worst team in the East. Philly's just not scoring the points to be able to win this game, I don't think. You know, somehow, some way, Dallas with its gimmicky running and that one step and shovel pass game has put up 835 points this year. Mm-hmm. It's a team that's going to score 1,000 points. Dallas at home 5-1. Philly on the road again 2-6. Like we said, road does weird things to people. Philly doesn't stand a chance in this one.
Nope, I agree. And which we could possibly say would be the second biggest game of the week, next to the Pittsburgh-Orlando game. Spokane, the suddenly resurging Spokane shock, goes to Arizona to play the Rattlers. Should be a very, very interesting game, considering that Lifetime, guess who leads the series, Adam? Spokane, 4-0.
Yeah, I mean, Shock won the game in, what was it, April?
Yeah, in April. April, yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, By a single point. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Arizona came all the way back in that game, picked up all those onside kicks, and they went for two at the end.
Exactly.
And didn't get it. So, yeah, of course, that was back when Spokane was a lot healthier, had a lot more warm bodies on the roster than it does now. This is, it's also the last home game of the year for Arizona.
Well, it's funny. It's like a Scrabble board. When it comes to the QBs in Spokane, it's like a giant Scrabble board. They have all the Q squares, they don't have any of the U's to get all those words together. So, I mean, but it's worked out.
Well, if you're going to play Scrabble, they should trade with Tampa Bay for Brian Zabniewski.
Hey, there we go.
but yeah, I mean, I just, like I said, there's something that kind of bugs me about the way that Arizona's playing lately. The second half against Iowa was not all that convincing. The game against San Jose was certainly not all that convincing. And the game against Philadelphia was a game they damn well should have lost. I'm not so sure that Spokane won't be able to come in here and win this game. We've seen Arizona be a mortal-looking team at times at home. We saw the game against San Jose. We saw the loss against Chicago. We saw the overtime win against Utah. We saw the great escape against Orlando. Mm-hmm. This is a mortal team that has a real chance. I'm not even so sure. I could see Arizona finishing up this year at 13-5. These are two tough games they've got left at Pittsburgh and at Dallas after this. I think this could be the beginning of the end and the beginning of something that could be really, really special for Spokane.
They could easily be like San Jose did a few years back.
I'm not sold on Arizona at all. I'm not sold on Chicago at all. I'm not sold on Dallas at all. I could see the winner of that Spokane-Utah game getting the Arena Bowl out of this conference.
Wow. Interesting. could be interesting. Arizona does have everything to play for in this game, but you're right. I mean, the past couple weeks, I don't know. I don't understand.
No, Arizona really doesn't have everything to play for, because if Chicago keeps dropping...
No, I'm saying, but just besides the number one, and I said this about Jacksonville before, too. Sure, nobody can cash them, but it's still, right now, it is to be, technically right now, the first two teams who could possibly host Arena Bowl. That's really, they still have to play for that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you do. And the offense... The offense really is looking like a pretty damn well fine-tuned machine for Arizona all season long. But again, I think Spokane is just playing the better football right now. And that's hard to say against a team that's 13-2. There's somebody out there, sure, the team that's on a 13-game winning streak that's playing better football right now. But there's something about that coaching job that Rob Keefe's done over in Spokane over the course of the last several years, not even just last year, that there's... There's something brewing right now in Spokane. It feels like since I've been on vacation, really, that this team's figured out how to turn it around. And no matter who's playing quarterback, and it doesn't seem like who matters who is out there, it's just a team that keeps figuring out how to win. I love teams that teams that regardless just find ways to win games. And it's such a refreshing change from Kansas City and from Utah on the road and from all these other teams that just can't find ways to win. This is a team that does find a way to win these close games.
You don't think that we're talking about it before, that the we know how Spokane's been playing as of late. You don't think their road record's going to hurt them at all in any way? I mean, they're 2-5 on the road.
Yeah, but they're 2-5 on the road, and how many of those losses came, when the team was really a train wreck?
Their good thing, though, is that they're 1-2, and they're only 1-2. And that's hard to believe. This is only their fourth divisional game.
That means it's a lot of important games down the stretch.
I know. They're only one. They're 1-2 in the division. I mean, it's
and that's why San Jose's not done yet, even though it's hard to see that team coming, coming all the way back from that. San Jose's going to have a chance to play its way in the playoffs, but it's. It might be too much of a mountain to climb at this point, especially when you haven't won a game in over 2 months.
Yeah. No, I know. It's poor San Jose. It's the same thing again. I didn't mean to click that. So you're saying you would just give a slight edge to Spokane this week, eh?
I'm giving it to Spokane this week. This is my double-digit underdog upset of the week.
Nice. The guru is back at least for one game, right?
Maybe.
Before we go, obviously it was great to have you back. I want to make mention there will not be a show next week. There's going to be no AFL tonight. We're not going to be broadcasting. As Adam was away, I'm going to be away next week. So unfortunately, no AFL tonight will be taped. I will be back for week... What week are we seven? I'll be back for week 19.
And that'll be an interesting week because we'll be able to go through all the 16-game records.
That's right, and we will be able to also talk about what happened in that outdoor game. How was it a good idea? Was it a bad idea? So I'll be back in time to watch that if it actually is broadcast on Nifty, which I'm hoping that it is. But so unfortunately, no show for you guys next week, but... hopefully we'll come up with something special for you when I do return. Before we go, Adam, any last words?
You tell everybody the news last week?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
No, well, fine. I told you a couple weeks ago when we signed off that I'd be coming back with some news. So anybody out there who was looking to get in touch with the guru, it's a little late. I did get engaged on this vacation, so the one floating around as GF de Guru in the chat room is now Fiance de Guru. So yes, Elizabeth and I are now happily engaged. Hopefully by the time Tim gets back from vacation, we'll have a date set.
Yay.
Probably June 23rd.
Nice.
Which, by the way, would be 1 year the day after I propose.
Very cool. Very cool. Obviously, congratulations from everybody here at the at Arena Fan and the at our staff crew. So it's nice to hear somebody else is getting married. I think now he said of all the Daves, the Jewish guys and the one Canadian, I think all of us are going to be married, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, Joe, Dave, myself. Yeah, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I'm the last one. Then it'll be up to Jason.
There you go. Yes. 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 We don't include him, though, do we? Are we including him in our little inside joke?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think
so. Because we came up with this last year.
Yeah, it's true, yeah.
Yeah. Of course, Andy was in the mix, but Andy's married, too.
Yeah, Andy's married, too. That's right. Yeah, meeting him was actually... I loved meeting him a couple weeks ago when he came to Montreal. That was fun.
Andy's a great guy.
Yeah. If you want to contact us about anything that you want for us to talk about in the next couple of weeks, do so. There are multiple ways. Obviously, there's the Twitter account. There's the Facebook account. It's /ArenaFan on both of them. And Tim.Capper@ArenaFan.com. Adam.Markowitz@ArenaFan.com. So for everybody here at the AFL Tonight family, first I want to wish everybody a happy Canada Day. Adam, you and everybody in the U.S. wish you a very happy Independence Day.
Good luck with your CFL season.
Yes. Yes.
Kickoff's on Thursday.
Yes, that's right. That's right. We will be seeing you for Week 19. So for everybody here, for Adam Markowitz, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.